Miyuki Yokiranta here. Welcome to Earshot. Few Australian bands have achieved success like the Cat Empire. Since 2001, the Six Piece have been making us dance. Their reputation for a raucous live show and their gritty work ethic has earned them fans around the world. The Cat Empire's style is impossible to pin down. The most accurate description might be uniquely Melbourne. Now, after 8 albums and 20 years of touring, the original lineup is disbanding. Before their final gig, the ABC's Mike Williams caught up with several Cat Empire members, including their manager, to reflect on their incredible story.
Since I was about 12, I had it in my head I wanted to be in a band. Probably because I'd seen this Springsteen VHS we had lying around the house. There was a live track of him performing Rosalita in 73, and it just looked like a hell of a lot of fun. I'm Felix Riebel. I'm the singer and one of the songwriters and percussionist of the Cat Empire. I had a friend at that stage, and he played guitar and I was playing drums then, and it's like, we needed to find a bass player. And so it's sort of scattered around parties. We'd go out on the weekend and we'd ask everyone at these house parties, you know, do you know any bass players? One night I got lucky and someone said, oh yeah, there's this kid called
Ollie McGill.
He's a great bass player.
Yeah, I remember rocking up to Felix's house for the first time for a little jam. I'm not sure if they were dreads, but he had stuff in his hair and like crazy clothes that were all ratted up.
And then Ollie and I sort of made this instantaneous friendship. Pretty much every weekend from then, we'd just get together and play, and we experimented with just about every style of music you could imagine, from totally thrash rock.
We had our amps turned up full.
Kind of screaming.
Really gone for it, you know, getting all of our teenage angst out.
To like him coming one day with a Dave Brubeck album and us trying to play that, you know, just basically anything we could get our hands on. This jazz pianist in Melbourne called Steve Settergreen had gone around to all the schools and found talented musicians from each class, you know, all around town, you know, public, private.
Steve is a great jazz piano player, but I think he's an incredible educator. His cogs got turning and just decided to form a band, but with the guidance of an incredibly experienced jazz musician. And the result was this really infectious music. We really started to build a following as the Jazz Cat.
And so I met Will Hull Brown on drums, I met Ryan Monroe on bass. Ollie was part of that, I already knew him.
I think that was about the time that I really started becoming more focused on piano.
It was just this fantastic collection of young Melbourne musicians.
And so we started jamming as a duo, just Felix and me, and fairly quickly we got the bass involved. Jazz Cat was happening simultaneously.
Felix, he'd started the Cat Empire on the side. My name's Will Hull Brown, and I'm the drummer in the Cat Empire.
I'm pretty sure that Carlton was trying to draft him for the footy. He's like 6'4", and he was like, oh, I'm weighing up sport and music, you know.
So I answered the phone in my in my family living room, and it was Felix.
Forget about Carlton trying to draft you.
I'm not sure what I want to do.
You've got to choose music. It's going to be great.
I'm grateful for that phone call.
And then one night I saw Harry perform.
Steve had a jazz club called Dizzy's, and we met Harry at Dizzy's, and he was always hanging out. I think he used to get up and sing with us and ultimately became part of the band.
And he just had this great voice, and he also picked up the trumpet and started playing, and he was kind of amazing.
The Cat Empire has always been about improvisation for me. It's almost like a transcendental feeling, you know, the music just elevates you. And it just feels so good.
And then lastly, to put it into context, there was a really great wave of hip-hop that we're into at that stage.
Felix thought, you know what would be great? Let's get like someone in on the decks to come and scratch, and it just give this whole other aspect to what we do, and it'd give us something unique.
Transcend the idea that we're a jazz band.
And I'd called a friend who apparently could kind of work his way around a set of turntables.
No, I'm I'm not really into it, but there's someone here behind me who might be interested.
He's a friend who's just come to visit, so he sort of passed the phone over to Jumps.
Hello.
Jumps just happened to be in the right place at the right time.
Suddenly it feels really contemporary and it feels new.
And then all of a sudden we were six, and that was the band. Started really dedicating myself to songwriting, and there was a few that I wrote where Harry said, oh, this feels like something you should sing, and it's pretty fun singing. And so we became this band with two lead singers.
After getting a bunch of tunes together, in a very rough form, mind you, they're all just jams that went for about 10 minutes, we decided to, you know, get a gig.
Very raw, lots of energy. It was like a crazy house party. Ollie hadn't quite learned it properly, so Harry's trying to tell Ollie while he's singing, you know, no, go to this chord, go to this chord. I remember just feeling like I was on the edge of my seat playing the drums the whole night.
In retrospect, that really feels like it was the start of something.
It's just this magic moment when you get in front of a crowd and something happens. The crowd's into it. That chemical reaction between the musicians being more than the sum of its parts. I was just really excited about playing music and for that music to lift a crowd and for chaos to ensue, you know, and for there maybe to be chances for us to do it every night of the week, you know. And so I remember finishing that show, going outside, looking up at the sky, going like, whoa, just taking a moment and going like, that was really, it was overwhelming in a really good way. And that's very addictive. And I remember thinking, oh, I'd love to do this every night of the week. That look up to the sky was everything like that. Just give it to me.
We had that massive success of that first gig, and then suddenly it was like, okay, shit's getting real, we've really got to work at this. And that was the first show Corrine saw.
My hair was standing on end, I was pressed up against the bar, just mesmerised by what was going on. My name is Corrine Wilkie and I'm the manager of the Cat Empire. They have this beautiful mentor, Steve Settergreen. He sat them down and he said, okay, guys, you know, now what you need is a manager, and, you know, with all this masculine energy going on, I think it should be a female, right? Do you know anyone? And Felix said, oh, actually, there's this woman who used to date my cousin.
Oh, Corrine, that's right. She'll be great. I should just get her on board.
And instead of starting my dream job in advertising, I ran away with the band.
This is a song that came up for me one night when the news it had been telling me better one more war and one more fight.
Then we moved across the road to the Prince of Wales. I think we booked a monthly gig there. We got 400 people.
500 felt like a sea of people.
And then the next month it was 800.
And it just seemed to slowly build, and more people seemed to know about the band every time we came back.
People were talking about this band. People were recruiting their friends.
The band was really driven by word of mouth.
But it was so grassroots and organic.
It was like this special thing that we were all doing, and the audience was as much a part of the performance as the band was, because it was just like the energy levels were absolutely through the roof.
Our weapons were our instruments, were made from a timber and steel. We never yield to conformity, but stood like kings in a chariot that's running on a record.
And it all snowballed very, very quickly.
It became a night where people wanted to get in, you know, and eventually.
Fourth month, it was packed. We'd managed to sell out the Prince of Wales.
It was an amazing feeling, just feeling like, oh, wow, this is happening, this is going somewhere. And then you just slowly move from smaller venue to bigger, to bigger, to bigger.
You're beautiful tonight.
The songs that we had were, they were just really, really basic frameworks for improvisation. Probably 75% of the time that we're up there on stage performing to like thousands of people, we had no idea what we were doing.
I think that just goes with being young as well. You don't really think about the consequences and you just dive in and try something. And a lot of the times it'd work, but occasionally it wouldn't work because it's new and we're just trying to hold on. recording the debut album was quite a journey and a really fun creative process, because it wasn't just your typical, oh, let's just go into the studio for a few weeks and record an album. When a man becomes
an altar and what beast that must exist. The first album took about 9 months to make. This cousin who I'd met Corrine through, this third cousin, a longtime ex-boyfriend by that stage, his family was in macadamia farming in the hinterlands of Byron. He was very generous and he said, yeah, you can come up, I won't be there for, you know, this month. And so we converted this old macadamia nut house into a studio.
He still hits us up for free tickets all the time too, by the way.
There were mattresses on the walls for vocal booths. There were often mics in the middle of the macadamia nut farm to try and get some particular sort of reverb.
And a few of those early albums, but particularly that album, it really reflects our time on the road.
My strategy had been, let's not try to sell this thing to record labels until it's actually worth something. And by having thousands of people turning up in each city to see the band, we were already presenting value.
Which is really not the way it was traditionally done.
So we didn't have to sell our souls like most new bands do, because we had a lot more leverage. Guys like this, you need someone.
To have a first album become what it did was just extraordinary. And it all of a sudden transformed us from this purely late night word of mouth kind of band into a band that was playing in people's homes, and we were still kids, you know.
Mel and Charlie are here, and who are we with, Mel?
Well, right now we're joined in the studio by Felix and Harry from the Cat Empire. The band's just going off. Can you tell us about the beginning and how it all came to be?
Yeah, it's I suppose very much a product of just the Melbourne music scene, and I mean it was more about the attitude and how you played your music rather than what you were playing, and so it gave us this ability to take any sort of music and play it in this kind of Melbourne fashion, this really earthy, cheeky style.
And now, coming from such an underground sort of musical background, you are now so out in the open. Pretty much every major station in Australia is playing the Cat Empire. You're going on Rove tomorrow night.
Nah.
How does it feel to be out in the open?
I was driving in my car and I had Triple J on. Hearing your own stuff on the radio, it's just, there's nothing like it, really.
When Hello Hello blew up, I just remember that it was funny. We were just having the time of our lives.
Hello is one of those songs that I've made my peace with, you know, like, I got to give it credit insofar as it was always that great song at the party, and it started at a house party. It was just a joke that me and my friends had. But that was the hook for that song that Harry gave a horn hook to, and that we gave a really simple bounce to, and that became the song. The show doesn't need it anymore, but in those days it was just one that was working for us, and it was just like, oh, when can we play that one? Because that one makes the crowd lose it. After the first album and its success, one day, one woman, I guess there was that expectation of, oh, what are you going to do next? You know, we suddenly had an audience.
I don't think any of us felt any pressure because we had extra songs from the debut album. So some of those extra ones spilt over and we worked on them for Two Shoes, the next album.
One of the big influences on me and Ollie in the early days when we were kind of still figuring out what we wanted to do was those Cuban albums, the Buena Vista Social Club.
I learnt what a monchino was, which is the percussive style of piano that supports Cuban music.
That room that they're recording in sounds amazing. Where is that? The guy who recorded the Buena Vista Social Club was an engineer called Jerry Boyce.
And I called him. And he said, well, if you want to get that sound that you love, why don't you go to Cuba and make it?
Yeah, it just seemed like a great adventure.
Do you feel like there's a lot of bands like the Cat Empire who are travelling from other parts of the world to come and record there because of it?
Actually, no, I don't think so. I think it's a hell of a trip to go to Cuba. Once you sort out visas, customs.
Big commitment.
We smoked cigars, we drank rum, like it all made sense over there. There was always this magic in the band of like, oh, the Cat Empire's really Australian. They're sort of our band, but they represent this country overseas, and then they bring back all of these sounds from around the world and sort of somehow incorporate that into their palette. It's a pleasure to meet you. You look like one incredible creature. Wanna treat you fine. Let's dance and grind. Get so funky, flick that it's a crime. You're divine, you're sublime. And well, you blow my mind, hey. You can have a song like Sly, Car Song for Harry, and then go to a song like Two Shoes, which is title track and a bit slower and a bit more kind of epic, and then go to Miserere, which is a kind of a very introspective church hymn that goes for about 7 minutes. And that's always been one of the things about the Cat Empire, is how do you take this breadth of emotion and diversity and squeeze it all into one album?
You've been on tour for ages now, and I mean, you've been pretty much on tour for the last year and a half.
Yeah, pretty much.
And the last time that I spoke to you was about mid-2003, and you were kind of just starting the crazy roller coaster that has been the journey for Cat Empire. Mm. How are you feeling now, and whereabouts do you think you are right now on that ride?
It feels pretty settled now, which is great, you know, because we're such a live band, and playing live is really what we do best and feel most comfortable doing. And it's the whole adventure of it. Like, it really is like you start the trip and you go through so many different places and so many different moods and so many different nights. It doesn't matter what I say, it doesn't matter what I do, it seems I'm gonna
have to change my look for you. Well, so many nights, we did that in 2007, and when I think of that album, I think of Malibu.
10:22 p.m. That's just
that album. I think had just a really good feeling to it for me in terms of that time in our life.
In the music that we were making, there was no blueprint in terms of a look or a culture that we had to fit into. It was kind of a mishmash of everything.
All of those experiences were so positive, and the band was evolving so quickly. We were so excited about the music. All I wanted to do was get on the road.
From New York, the greatest city in the world.
It was right around the period where we were touring America a lot.
Our next guests are an acclaimed band from Australia who are making...
That was a real spin.
Tonight. Please welcome the Cat Empire.
We worked it really hard, but they were always looking for the band to be categorised in a way that we simply couldn't do. I left the house, left the room with the foxy on my back. I've never really had an answer for what the Cat Empire is stylistically as much as I have. It's just about a feeling, you know, it's about this sort of embracing the night.
Cat Empire, everybody. There we go. Now it's a party, for God's sake.
We had more than just a song to sell. We were selling without even knowing it, I don't think, we were selling a lifestyle. People came to our shows and they saw a bunch of guys having a really good time on stage.
We've kind of had this privilege of selling joy, and it's a rare commodity. Hands are in the air and everybody's singing their hearts out. It's euphoria.
Here it goes again. Here it goes again.
You live that teenage dream out, standing outside looking at the sky and the stars. After that first gig, all I was saying to myself was, I just want to do this every night. There was someone up there who said, yeah, okay, I want to give it to you every night and see how you cope with it. And then you get to your 30s, you know, and you've gone through some relationships, and some people have families and kids, and less intoxicated with that boundless horizon.
Over a 20-year career, you can't just keep doing things the same way. You can't possibly think you're going to feel the same way as a, you know, 39-year-old as you did as a 19-year-old.
News on your personal life. You just have yourself a 12-week-old baby.
It does change everything, what you spend your days doing and thinking about.
I'm a total introvert. And so being on the road with 12 other boys is always been quite overwhelming for me.
you're very happy to be all squished into a car, you know, when you're 19 years old, not having to get a 9-to-5 job, but then spending the next 18 years of your life for long in a living on a bus going from city to city. What a disaster.
It definitely gets to be a bit of a pressure cooker. We don't know if it's 1 o'clock
or 5:30. I remember I got to the end of one tour and I was just like, oh, I don't know if I want to do this anymore. I brought it up with the rest of the band and I realised everybody was feeling the same way.
What I want to know is, like, when there's six of you in a band, how on earth do you ever actually get anything together? You obviously have a really amazing working relationship, or do you just secretly just go the biffo?
You know, I've had a couple of years there where I really hated being in the Cat Empire. I really hated the kind of happy, upbeat nature of it. I wanted to be, I guess, perceived as a more serious artist.
We've had some proper fights along the way, not as many as people might think.
Having two front men in the band, Felix and Harry, there's always going to be certain dynamics at play there. You know, like, okay, who's in charge?
At some point in the band, I became distant to Felix in particular, controversial as it might be to hear.
There have been tours where there have been a lot of tensions, and if you weren't talking to someone in the band or you're having trouble with them, you just wouldn't. But then you'd get on stage and then that's when you'd make your eye contact.
Yeah, that was probably around the recording of Cinema. It's an album that definitely seemed to represent the darkness amongst the band. I used to ride up on the hill and look
down at the darkened silhouettes. I remember being deeply heartbroken at the time of that album. I remember being kind of lost in the studio. You know, I had a few ideas for songs, but no mirth, you know. It was probably the furthest we got from the Cat Empire sound, that Cinema album, you know, and probably the time when we were most exhausted and strung out and worn out. Like, how do we keep on being this band that is supposed to represent to all the people who are coming out here to see us tonight as the escape from all of those things while we're going through them ourselves? What is this band? What's it supposed to be doing? Like, where do we sit now?
And so by the time you get to almost 10 years in, I think you just feel like you need a bit of a break. I really feel like that new energy came during Steal the Light, actually, which was in 2013.
We were having a conversation about this very thing, you know, should we be making an album that's more in line with where we are as individuals, that's more mature, that maybe has more light and shade? And there was this sort of epiphany in the room that day where the conversation ended up being, who are we making this for? Maybe this thing isn't about us anymore. Maybe this thing that we're doing is for them. And so if we go and make an album that's just flat out what the audience wants, how might that change the album? What if I'm lonely? What if the sky
should fall and disappear for one night only? Sometimes kind of resent that reputation as being a fun band, and then at other times you kind of realise how special that is to have a whole crowd that you've just made happy.
We really came back to embracing what the Cat Empire was, you know. This is a bona fide festival band. We need this album to record so well that as soon as we get back on a festival stage, it's going to explode.
We really found our sound again, brought back that young energy.
And that's what that Steal the Light album was for me. It was a return to my youth without being young. No matter where you're going and no matter where you've been, you
never needed anybody else's call now. For a long time it belonged to the band, and then there was this moment where we handed it over and it belonged to the audience.
These days I'm really, really, I love the Cat Empire. I love what it represents. And yeah, it's more just about everything feeds into each other.
We'd kind of gone through this really dark period and we had to kind of dig deep to find something that was really going to rekindle the band. And Brighter Than Gold, to me, really is the song that represents that. It managed to create a sense of party, which we needed. All night awake in the moonlight, I'm with you. In the moonlight, I'm with you, brighter than gold.
amazingly, they stepped into the studio and made the most magnificent, big, bold album that was all fanfare and anthem and beauty. And that was our first record on their independent label globally, and it was huge.
And so it was just sort of no surprise that we wanted to do that again a few years later when we did Rising with the Sun. Fast forward another couple of years and we end up out in the country for Stolen Diamonds. We weren't so fancy-free that we could just hang out in Cuba for a month. So there was a few more parameters by the time we got up to these later albums.
What's quite overwhelming is the nature of this sort of shared journey over time. And there's this overwhelming conversation that keeps coming through in social media, which is the Cat Empire has been the soundtrack to my life. You know, I first discovered them when I was at uni and I was living in a share house. And then I met my wife at one of their gigs. And when we got married, the wine song was the song we danced to. And when my child was born, the music was played. You know, and there's this ongoing narrative where we can see that they've shared this really long journey with us over two decades. And, you know, there's such a beauty in that. With a twinkle in my eye, cause I sang songs, spun stories, love, laughed and drank wine. Tomorrow is another day, the cats are out to play, to play.
Before the pandemic hit, we had a plan in our minds that the 20th anniversary of the band would be this world tour that went around and said farewell.
And just finished with a bang, you know, while we're all still playing well. Obviously, that got blown out of the water because COVID happened and then everything got halted.
As that was kind of denied, I got a whole new outlook. It was really based on the fact that the world had been denied live music and that wasn't there and there was a lack. Things weren't as bright as they should be. There was a dullness and a kind of a depression shrouding itself over my city, you know, the city of Melbourne that I've talked about so much. It kind of wasn't an option for me anymore. It really changed my perspective. It's like I wanted the Cat Empire to become something that could go into our old age, and Ollie had very similar feelings.
I think it's just time. I've got small children, and I guess I just hit maybe my midlife moment where I just went, okay, what else have I got? And I think I just sort of got curious about what life beyond the Cat Empire might look like.
It stays like this, that'll make us happy, like a puppy getting lucky with a lassie.
20 years is enough time. And I look back and go, that was incredible. I'm ready to hang up the boots there and move on. There's definitely parts of me that feel sad about it, because when you do something for so long, it becomes part of your identity. But I just really want the opportunity to celebrate what we've done as well.
Felix and Ollie will continue on, and there is so much life left in the Cat Empire. We've built this incredible band, brand. I do want it to see another life, and I just get to enjoy it. I just be the, you know, drunk woman in the front row with my hands in the air for once.
As sad as it has been to see some of the other members go, it's made a lot of sense to me that this is the way it's ended up. Felix and I started with that relationship of, you know, creating music together, and really ended up in the same relationship. And now we're feeling as excited as the day we met.
I haven't let go of that friendship with Ol and that deep need to keep on being curious about music. And the Cat Empire, to me, represents all of that. The spark in the night web where people come together and forget about their everyday. And that doesn't get old, you know, that can evolve. It doesn't have to be the same. This thing is kind of bigger than any of us as individuals.
Rise of the Cat Empire was produced by Mike Williams. The sound engineer was Russell Stapleton. I'm Miyuki Okiranta, and I'll catch you next time, somewhere within earshot.
A message from Steve Sedergreen.
Hey, Cannon Pie guys. It's been a pleasure knowing you. You've done such great work. It was a pleasure being part of your initial stage of your journey. I know you're in a different position now, but it's all cool. We love what you've done. You've taken what I'm all about, which is all about listening with your heart, being brave, being honest, and always, always being family. We'll see you soon. Have a great time. We'll see you soon.